Nickels and Dimes on our airwaves.
He must be working on his doctorate.
Yes, he's writing books, reading them, and also philosophizing. I don't know if it's a word.
He's probably doing a double-blind study right now.
Multiple double-blind studies. While reading a book.
Wow.
While philosophizing.
While
that's
squatting
what Nate Nickel does.
600
Look,
pounds.
We sit there, we try to make money on a day-to-day basis. He's changing the world every single day. He introduced me to a new terminology, a new movement, transhumanism, and he's going to change the world while we're sitting here like selling stuff and talking about sports.
Define transhumanism.
Well, we're going to let Nate Nickel define it because I don't even know what it means. I read it and I was lost just reading the definition. Nate Nickel, Nickels and Dimes, how the heck are you?
Yeah, shut up, man. You know what it means.
Tell me what it means, Nate. I don't understand these big words that you always... You know, we have this group text going on, and, like, everything that Nate Nickel says is truth. Like, we sit there and banter, and we argue. We're dumb jocks. Keel's actually quite smart. But Nate, whenever Nate comes in on the conversation, he puts us all to shame, and his intellect is just, it's so far above ours, it's ridiculous.
Wait, Nate,
what does transhumanism mean?
Yeah, Dan's over there thinking, what are you talking about, Criddle? Because Dan's known me forever, and he's thinking, he doesn't believe you right now, Criddle.
Yeah, but when you were at Stanford getting your law degree and like acing all the tests, he was getting his face beat in the octagon. So he doesn't remember anything.
So, well, transhumanism is, we're all just going to become computers, basically. Like, here's the deal. If you can live for 10 years, you're going to be able to live for 20 years because the technology that's going to be available in 10 years is going to prolong life another 20 years. If you can live for 20 years, you can live forever. Like, by 2030, like, we're not going to have hearts or lungs. We're just going to upload our minds eventually to the internet. That's transhumanism. There are a lot of interesting things. I mean, I think we're talking BYU football today, but...
No, but I want to talk transhumanism as it relates to BYU sports.
We're basically all going to become like Johnny Depp. And what was that movie where he...
Transcendent.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the reviews were way worse than the movie. The movie is pretty good, and it's not like that crazy. So it took, 15 years to decode the AIDS virus, and it only took a month to decode the SARS virus just because of the advances in technology. When they started the Human Genome Project, it was going to take like thousands of years based on the current technology, and then they ended up finishing it like a couple years ahead of schedule, and it took like 8 or 10 years, something like that. So, yeah, things get crazy. Assuming exponential progress, which, you know, maybe it's an S-shaped progress, or maybe it's the hockey stick. So assuming it's the hockey stick, things get really crazy in about 20 years. So that's a little bit, little intro to transhumanism and where things are going if technology continues to improve it at an accelerating rate.
So since we are on this topic, Nate, before we get to BYU football, what is your stance on AI? Is it a good thing, bad thing, dangerous thing? Where do you sit on it?
Yeah, so the crazy thing about AI is by evolutionary standards, we're like just a little bit smarter than apes. Now, in some ways, we're lots.
I love it.
We're lots smarter than apes. But just like in terms of evolutionary standards, we're a little bit smarter. You don't have to be a lot smarter than another species to basically dominate that species. So yeah, AI is dangerous because the first super intelligent machine that you create, the one that's smarter than us, that's the last invention humans will ever make, because then the machines start creating smarter and better machines. And if they're just a little bit smarter than us, then it gets pretty dangerous.
Is it a real threat?
Absolutely. It's an existential threat. Yeah, I mean, if technology continues to improve at an accelerating rate, yeah, 30 years, 20 years, it's an absolute threat. If
Ben, you're over here laughing at us right now. We're talking about real-world stuff. You want to talk about stuff that doesn't matter, like BYU football. We're talking about how Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to come as a Terminator and kill all of us.
Look,
it's possible. It's absolutely possible.
You know, it's just because I'm not as smart as you guys, and so, like, I just think it's funny. I have to scoff at you and laugh at you because you guys are smarter and you see probably the future, to make myself feel better and so I can sleep at night. there's no way I'm going to believe anything you guys say because I'm so positive. So positive. I got to block it all out.
But that's where transhumanism comes in. Because if we can evolve with the AI, if we can upgrade ourselves and if we become the super intelligent computers, then, you know, I think then you reduce the existential threat.
Well, and then you know what happens to sports? And then it's going to be like the gladiators all over again because you're going to have the subhumans, right, that are not AI upgraded. Mm. And for your own entertainment, you're going to have Jan Jorgensen's running out there that are not AI uplifted, and they're going to be killing each other. And this is sickening. I don't like where this is going.
Yeah, but listen, we already have LeBron James, and there's no bigger freak in the history of the universe than LeBron. Even with computers, you could probably never create somebody better than LeBron. So, I mean, Jordan's like a little... He's like a little minion compared to LeBron, right?
Let's talk BYU sports. Mickles and Dimes, Nate Mickle on with us here at Cougar Sports on ESPN 960. Also, the strongest pound-for-pound athlete ever to come out of BYU, at least during the Bronco Mendenhall era. I think Coach Omer would attest to that. Nate, we were chit-chatting via text, and I said, you know, we need to talk about this on air. You were doing a little bit of research on the 2014 recruiting class. And you were double thumbs up. I mean, we sit there and we try to criticize Bronco for his recruiting classes, but pretty much they've stayed the same. I think in the last 20 years, the talent level's still pretty dang good. There might be some ebbs and flows, but typically you're about the same. You're a top 40, top 45 recruiting class. What did you think about that 2014 recruiting class?
Yeah, so I just thought it was interesting looking back at it after only one season. And there are actually quite a few studs from just one season, which is pretty surprising because usually the studs, they're not going to emerge for 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 years with the LDS mission. But looking at last year, you had Jordan Wesley, stud, and he's gone. So, I mean, that sucks for BYU, but he's a stud. You got Nick Kurtz, he's a stud. You got Sione Takitaki, that guy's a stud. Tijon Kuroma, he's a stud. Fred Warner is a stud. Right there are five guys that are studs, legitimate stud D1 players. You compare that to the 2013 class, and Dre Wesley is really about the only one we know right now. Like, yeah, I guess he's a stud. He's pretty dang good at Dre Wesley. Starts at left tackle. We lost Tearsley. We lost Levitt. And then there may be some guys that will be studs, like Talon Shumway, Kainakua, Michael Davis, Jordan Prater are playing and doing well, but I wouldn't put those guys in the stud category yet. So I just thought it was pretty interesting that you've already got five studs out of 2014. And then you got the other guys who I think will be studs. Matt Bushman, he's a guy out of Arizona. Watching his high school tapes, he looks like Pitta to me. He's a stud, I think. You have, like, Isaiah Nakua, who's got a chance. Uriah Leutawa, who is the Stanford commit, who changed last minute. You got Tyler Cook, Romney's brother, Tiankum Fuga, who had a bunch of offers. So, yeah, I think we're going to look back in a couple years and say, that 2014 class, that was a pretty dang good one, especially compared to 2013. 2012, you had Jamal and Taysom. So two huge studs. Maybe we'll have Tanner Mangum as a stud. Maybe Troy Hines will be. Don't know. 2011, you had Riker and Louie that we know. That's about it. So just to already have that many, pretty impressive for just 1 year out.
Nate, why do you think that is? Why do you think that class was so much better? Do you think it was just BYU got lucky? Do you think it's a change in recruiting philosophy, maybe with Coach and I and coming in and implementing some of his philosophies? What do you think it is?
My initial reaction is probably in line with what Ben said earlier. I think BYU football is done about the same recruiting for the last 10 or 15 years. And I personally just tend to think, and some of our teammates would disagree with me on this, that generally BYU is going to get about the same guys. The systemic limitations / advantages BYU has with the honor code and the church, it's advantageous for some. It's not for other athletes. And so I think you're about the same year to year. I think 2014, they were really fortunate with getting Wesley and Kurtz's transfers. So I hope for BYU's sake that it was some sort of something that BYU coaches figured out. But I don't know. I think, time will tell. 2015, we'll see if there are any studs there. 2016, of course, you know, we'll see. But I think it's too early to say if 2014 is the beginning of a trend or if it was just more of an outlier.
You know, it's funny. I know the trend these days, because of the type of athlete you bring in, is to play them right away. You got to get them on the field, right? But I understand that there are some players that you have to get on the field. You got to keep them interested. But when this many players as true freshmen see the field in substantial playing time, you find studs, right? This is good, right? We're talking about the positives. But I also look at recruiting the last 2 to 3 years. I'm like, whoa, what happened to those guys? Were there injuries? Were those recruiting classes just didn't pan out? I mean, what's your thought on that? As you look at those studs that came in and competed and got significant playing time, did they really deserve it? Would they have done this in years past? Do you look at the last 2 years and be like, well, there wasn't any studs in that group? You mentioned there are studs in this group. Were there not any studs in that group in the past?
Yeah, that's a great point. And Jan's question, you know, is it because you figured something out? Well, maybe the answer is no. Maybe it's just simply they missed for 3 years, and so some of these young guys had to step in. So we've been talking, Crittle, about the talent level over the last 10, 15 years. And what I think is fascinating is thinking back to 2004 as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So 2004, Crittle, you were still playing JUCO ball, right?
Yeah.
But you'll know most of these guys. So BYU finishes 5-7, misses out on a bowl game. It's Croton's last year.
But strength of schedule was very difficult. You played the number 1 and the number 6 team in the nation.
Yeah, so strength of schedule was there. But, I mean, what, had like 8 turnovers against UNLV, and I think that was the nail in the coffin for Coach Croton. But check out this team. You had 2 NFL wide receivers in Austin Colley and Tal Watkins, so probably the best tandem BYU's ever had. Now, maybe Mitch and Kurtz, Leslie, had they all played together last year, could have challenged that status. Maybe this year with Mitch and Kurtz and Houck, they can challenge that. But 2 NFL wide receivers, 2 NFL tight ends, Pitta and Coates. You had an NFL quarterback in Beck. He was young, but still he's an NFL quarterback. You had an NFL fullback, Fahu Tahi, Curtis Brown, all-time leading rusher. On defense, you had Brady Pazinga, a 10-year NFL vet, Cam Jensen, NFL linebacker, Aaron Francisco, NFL safety, Sean Nua, NFL D lineman. Your offensive line was Travis Bright, Ray Fanga, Jake Kreza, Scott Young, Eddie Kill, Ofa. All those guys were NFL, good NFL potential. And the team went 5-7.
Wow.
The crazy thing to me is, in some ways, maybe talent has dropped based on the number of NFL draft picks that BYU's had recently. On the other hand, BYU's still winning a lot of games for not having that. So if they can get – if NFL draft picks is an indication of the overall talent level, if BYU can improve there and get a couple more each year, I really think – man, Mendenhall has done – he's won a lot of games for not having very many NFL guys get drafted compared to what, Lavelle did back in the day. So if the 2014 class is an indication of improved talent coming to BYU, then that can serve as a basis for some really strong teams coming up.
Mickles and Dimes, Nate Mickle on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960.
Nate, 2004, was that the year you're playing running back?
I was a running back that year, yes. I tried out for the team, 195, 195 pounds around 4.940. Yeah, that was that year.
Was that the same year that someone threatened to murder you?
That was the same question I was going to ask.
Yeah. That was the year that my life was threatened. Hey, when it's your turn to get reps, if the guy doesn't want to come out, sometimes you got to just pull him out, and that makes people want to kill you.
Getting reps is a serious thing.
It is good. I got to get my reps. It's my turn. Look, I got to get my reps. Even if we're down by the goal line, the coach said for me to go in, I'm going in. You can threaten my life. I'm going in.
Nate, how did he say it, though? Can you imitate it?
No, I'm not going
He's not going that far. Nate, okay. Now, real question. Not that that wasn't a real question. It was a real question, but even a more real question.
That was
question.
The best question of the entire interview right there.
So you look at what BYU has done. You just pointed out what they did in 2004 with maybe the most talented BYU team has had over the last 15, 20 years. What they did then, and they were a mid-level team, what they're doing now. BYU fans are always looking. BYU, can they take that next step? Legitimately, do you think this BYU team, can they – is there anything that BYU can do to make that jump Do you see that happening? We're talking about recruiting classes, level of talent coming in. I guess this is a really long question. But is it feasible that BYU does make that jump and become that elite team that it seems like BYU fans are always hoping and thinking is going to happen?
Well, yeah, absolutely. On a year-by-year basis, or, you know, for an occasional team, absolutely. They've done it in the past. They can do it again. You got a Heisman contender. You've got an all-time leading rusher. You got two of the best wide receivers. You got an offensive lineman that's got at least probably a couple NFL guys, and Louis, maybe Tijon. You got a defense that's got eight linebackers that all have experience, a D-line that has experience. I mean, this year could be a year that there's, yeah, they have a chance that Boise State can get up to that elite level for years at a time. Absolutely, BYU can. Who knows if they will? I don't know.
Nickels and dimes?
I think they can.
Oh,
I
no.
Think Mendenhall's the coach. I think Mendenhall's an excellent coach.
No, I agree with you. I think it, you know, stars align. You know, you got to make the right decision. I think the only criticism I ever have for Bronco Mendenhall, honestly, and they're small criticisms, because look, 70% winning percentage, going to bowl games every single year, even 8-5 seasons. I mean, there are teams out there that would give an extremity for a consistent team like that, and we take it for granted, right? Because we're spoiled, but. You know, I don't like the oversight at times in special teams. You know, I look at that 2012 season. We were breaking that down. Remember how good that defense was? Statistically,
oh, yeah.
Probably the best, along with maybe, I don't know, the 98 defense was good, 96 was good. You go into the 80s, the 85 team was pretty good. There was other defenses that were the 06, 07. But statistically, that 2012 team, points per game, was the best. Right, they did not give up points. The goal line stands, right. Ridiculous. But what happened? Three games. Number one, you had a senior quarterback that got hurt. Mismanagement of the quarterback, letting him play with a broken back. I think that was an issue. what, Jan?
You think that's an issue?
Yeah, I think that's
small,
an issue.
Small issue.
Small issue. Small broken issue. Back. Should we let him play? Sure, why not? Let's give him a shot. But the kicking game, you lost three games by 1 point in Boise. You lost the Notre Dame game by 3 points, the eventual runner-up to the national champion, and then you lost to Utah by 3 points because you couldn't hit a field goal because you put out onto the field a kicker that had gotten bitten by a brown recluse, had hurt his back, had surgery, and fallen off his unicycle like 15 times before each game.
Yeah, but he was one of the best high school shooters ever.
I know, but he wasn't ready to play. He had come off back. I'm saying that was an oversight, in my opinion.
Okay.
What's the question?
What
are we getting at here, Ben? What are we getting at here? What are we getting? Where are you going with this?
Bronco Mendenhall is an elite coach. He is. But there are times where you have the talent to win, and it's totally on the coach. And I believe 2012, you had the talent to win 11 games. That should have been 11-1 team with that defense. It should have been.
Let me ask you this question.
But it was the coaching staff's fault at that
time. Let me ask you this question, Nate, and I guess since we're reminiscing a bit here, you think that what year was that?
2012.
How much different is the record with Coach and I as the offensive coordinator?
So was that Doman's second year? That was his first year.
That was his second year.
So
that was when Heaps was not cutting it. Riley came into that Utah State game and saved Brandon Doman and everybody else from the abyss of the Aggies.
Well, first of all, get to Ben's point. I think you can make the argument that Mendenhall had all the credit in the world because he had such a phenomenal D that year. Maybe that's not the best argument, but I think it's possible. If a Nye is the offensive coordinator, look, there are so many fans, players who just, I think, don't appreciate a Nye for how consistently solid he is. When your quarterback breaks your back, you're going to have a rough season regardless of who the offensive coordinator is. I personally, and some of my former teammates disagree with me on this, and some of the fans do, and I think Anai's stats speak for themselves. I think he's a pretty dang good coach. notwithstanding the simplicity, I think there's some excellence that comes from that simplicity. I don't know if the record's that different that year when your quarterback breaks his back.
But you still had Taysom Hill in the ranks. You had a 4-star James Lark that got. Anyways, we can break that 2012 season down, but all I'm saying, Coach Manuel's still an elite coach, like he is. The only thing that you can really criticize him for is, I think, you know, certain just mismanagement. But every coach struggles with that, okay? Nate, last question for you.
I got a question for you, though.
All right, go ahead. You ask the question.
I want to know who the starting secondary is going to be this year, because a couple years ago, I was asking you that, and you said, hey, there's this new guy, Robertson Daniel, out of JUCO. I watched him, and he's legit, and he will start, and he's dang good. And you nailed it, especially Rob's junior year. He had an excellent junior year. So I want to know, who's going to start in the secondary this year?
Yeah, so the guy that's going to turn everybody's heads is Micah Hanneman.
Is he that good? I mean, he's literally number one on the depth chart, right?
Yeah. He's number he climbed up that depth chart actually rather quickly. He can play any position in the secondary, honestly. That's what's
six
so crazy
foot,
about
185.
Him. What's that?
6 foot, 185.
Yeah, but I mean, he can play some free safety too. He's pretty good at open field tackles. His baseball turn is phenomenal. He could play boundary or he could play field, and I think they're pushing him to play more field. I think his offseason will probably be better than a Shelton or a Mike Davis, just how it is. Mike Shelton and Davis are phenomenal athletes, but I think Hanneman is going to have a better offseason. Now, Prater is going to lock down that boundary corner spot. I just don't see anybody unseating him. You know, Garrett Juergens is going to try. They have Juergens playing some field as well. Kamel Green going to try. But, you know, I think actually Shelton should be moved – you know, back and forth between boundary and field as well. But I don't think there's anyone out there that has the length of Prater, right? The thing that makes Prater so good, he's not I don't think he's an elite athlete yet. He's got decent speed, he's got decent quickness, but he gets his hands on receivers and he deviates them from routes. Prater's going to lock down that boundary spot, and he'll continue to improve. I think he's working hard this offseason. He's a little sick these last few weeks, so he's lost some weight. But he'll be there. I think it's going to be Hanneman and Prater.
Okay, how about safety?
I don't think you can take Kai Nakua off the field. And then the other guy that's been really hyped up, it's going to be, according to some people, well, Unga. Don't count Unga out. But Takanaka also is going to be there. So I think there might be a little bit of a rotation there with Kai, Takanaka, and Unga. Grant Jones doesn't have the hip swivel. He's big. He's strong. He's fast. Doesn't have that hip swivel for coverage. Badger will try to see time as well, just because he's a quarterback on the field. He's a coach on the field. That's what you want out there, right? No, it's going to be difficult for Badger to be isolated in any zone coverages, but with some man principles where he's having to run the seam with an extremely good athlete. But those are the guys that I expect to step up in the secondary.
Okay, I'm watching for that. You nailed Robertson Daniel. I'm watching for Micah Hanneman.
Right? Dude, I tell you what, Micah Hanneman is a baller. If he stays healthy, which I think he will, that guy is legit. He's a legit football player. So watch out for him, Mickles and Dimes.
Hey, I learned something today, guys.
We took up 10 minutes talking about transhumanism. We want you on again.
Day.
So Jan said he wants you to come on every single week, and I agree with him.
Every Friday.
Every Friday?
Can we make this happen?
We can try to do that as long as I talk about transhumanism.
Okay, you can talk a little bit about transhumanism. Only 5 minutes per show.
Okay, we have 5 minutes.
All right, Nate, we got to let you go, brother. Have a lovely evening. Say hello to your family for me. Appreciate you coming on our airwaves.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.